When I think about this, I think there's kind of like two major contributors to new content. And one is research universities and colleges, but the other is associations. Associations exist in a lot of cases to create this content to raise the boats, right? So the reason you can get a 501c6 status is because you are contributing to the greater good. And so publishing standards and specifications, doing research, having peer-reviewed journals, right? Even just newsletters and articles and opinions and blogs advances this thing, because associations are made up of the experts in these niche industries, right? So you take any given association, the more letters they have in their acronym, the more niche they are, the fewer members, but the more expert those members are in that thing. And so I just love working with these people who know everything there is to know about whatever that industry is they represent. And so they contribute this new content, whether they give it to the AIs, the answer engines or not. Certainly, I think they should have their own if they don't do it to the big ones. That's a bright spot I see in the future for continuing to move humanity forward.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Normally, I speak with an association or nonprofit CEO, but today's episode is a little different. Today, I'm speaking with Rob Wenger, CEO of Higher Logic. Higher Logic is a prominent and important industry partner in the association space. Rob, you and I have known each other a long time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Rob. So there's probably three people among my listeners who don't know Higher Logic. And for those three people, tell us about Higher Logic.
Our main thing is building community. So we have an online community product. We have some marketing products. We have a lot of AI related stuff that really ties together the idea of bringing the communities that associations already are online. So getting them to engage with each other online, giving them tools to connect and things like that. So our product's called Thrive, and it is a kind of a mixture of community, volunteering, mentoring, marketing, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
So Rob, you know, I was just in a meeting with a client, and she said that they're planning for their annual conference, and what they're hearing from their members is that they're less interested in the content this year, at least, and maybe moving forward, and more interested in connections.
Yes.
What would you say to that?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's going to be interesting to see where the content and data goes with AI. I have some thoughts on that, but the human connection is going to be more and more important as AI kind of takes off some of that other stuff. And so, yeah, I hadn't heard that, but it resonates.
Yeah. Well, you and I help our clients and their members connect virtually. You know, many associations are saying, but people want to be in person. I'm actually a believer in virtual connections as well, that they can be just as meaningful. So what do you say to someone who says, well, you know, the connections happen at our conferences, for example?
Well, I think, you know, conferences are typically once a year. They're expensive. They don't reach everybody, especially lower in the organization. I think my concern with conferences is always like, who's there? And it's kind of the same people every time.
Mm.
And sort of the new thinkers that are younger or even middle of their career don't get to go. And so you need to give them a place to connect. Otherwise, they don't feel engaged with the community, the industry. So, yeah, I mean, that's my biggest concern. Obviously, a lot of associations have local chapter type meetings they can attend that have no or low cost. But You really need those fresh ideas. Otherwise, you get this echo chamber effect. I know even the conferences that I go to, and I go to a dozen a year at least, it is the same people. And I love it because I love meeting them. But I don't see a lot of as many new people as I would like.
I was in another meeting with a client, and this was a trade association, and somebody said, man, should we be working on community, online community this year? And kind of the prevailing wisdom was that trade associations struggle with online community because of the competitive aspects of what they're doing. So what do you see out there?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I literally have the same thought and have for a lot of years. And I was presenting to my sales team at the sales kickoff. We have a sales kickoff meeting every January. And I essentially said that. And one of the sales guys raised his hands and he said, I don't find that to be the case.
Oh.
I said, well, tell me about that. He said, well, I've been selling as many trade associations as I have professionals, and they are very successful. And I went back and looked at the data, and we have a lot of clients. We have 2,000 associations. This client's more than that, 2,300, something like that. The percentage of customers in trade versus professional is almost exactly the percent that they are in the world. And by almost, I mean like 0.01% the same. So I was wrong.
Wow.
And it was interesting. What that tells me, first of all, is that there's a lot of trade association CEOs who are thinking differently, who are bringing this idea out there. And I think we overestimate how many of them care that much about preventing collusion, meaning it's certainly a thing. And, you know, I always had a couple of models that were big associations that had few members, and they existed to be in the room when people are talking. But there's many, many others, especially lower in the organization, where it doesn't matter. And for them to be able to benefit from their peers makes total sense. And so once I looked at it, I was like, oh, well, yeah, they're below the CEO. They're professionals anyway. So does it really make sense to stop all of them just because the CEO shouldn't be in talking to each other?
Yeah. Interesting. So maybe for the associations that are much more CEO focused, and we certainly know many of them are because they're highly focused on lobbying, you know, maybe community doesn't work as well for them, online community at least, but for the others, you know, I'm going to have to think about this and I'm going to quote you from now on.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome to. And I have lots of data.
Excellent. Well, Rob, let's turn to your journey, right? I know that you're out there talking on podcasts, but few people really know about the Rob Wanger journey. So where did you come from?
I'm a computer science guy. I've been writing software since I was 11. My father was a software developer and a roboticist, so I got that bug as a kid and just love it. We were talking earlier, I still do it at nights and weekends because I love it so much. I'm a serial entrepreneur as well. I founded two companies prior to HireLogic, one in more of the banking telecom space around more bringing engineering talent to projects. And the second one was in the association space where we made sort of the member self-service software before the AMSs were doing it. Many, many, many years ago. I kind of fell into it then. HireLogic was much more, love this market, let's build something for it. And the theory at the beginning was, you know what? Most software companies don't cater so much to the members. They focus more on the association staff, right? Who are the buyers and the decision makers? We thought there's a lot more value in bringing software to the membership. And that's how we started. And so the idea of a LinkedIn or Facebook style functions back in 2007, when even those two were first getting global recognition. My thought was, hey, you know, I joined LinkedIn early and I joined because somebody gave me an invitation. I was in there. I'm like, well, I don't know anyone in here. And I was like, oh, you know who would though? An association that has 50,000 people in it. Like they all know each other already. And so you can build a network instantly, right? And that was the initial genesis thought. And then it just grew from there into everything we have today that I already talked about. So that's sort of the founding story.
Well, Rob, let me ask you a question. So you're a techie at heart and by training.
Yes.
It's a really different skill set to start and run a company.
It is.
So what's that like? And also, like, most techies don't really want to run the company, right?
No, I know. You're right. And I was quite introverted when I was younger, and I sort of even was when I was first CEO of HireLogic, because I was CTO before. But when you become CEO, and of course I was CEO of myself in the beginning, and then it grew, I had to grow with it. And so I literally changed my personality from introverted to extroverted, and from caring only about computers and bits and bytes to caring about people and finance and all those sorts of things. And, you know, I think as you take on responsibility, well, you're a CEO, so you know this, as you take on this responsibility for people, your eyes open. Like as an engineer, I never had to really think about people. I only thought about keyboards and code. But once you have, and we have 300 staff now, once you have lots of people under you and lots of different viewpoints, and if you take the attitude that everyone has something to contribute and you can listen, my attitude that I just say all the time is I learn something from every meeting, no matter what it is, even if I'm presenting, I learn something. And so that was a purposeful engineering style change that led to a totally different personality for me.
I think this is really fascinating because you basically said, I don't have the personality or the mindset to be a CEO, so I'm going to develop it. And that's very engineering.
It is.
My husband is like that. He'll kind of approach something and he'll make a plan and he kind of checks himself on a regular basis to make sure that he's making progress. And so you had this intentional process.
Yep. And I literally patterned it after traits I liked in leaders that I knew or people that I knew. And I would say, oh, I like that from that guy. Let me emulate that. I like that from that person. So I really developed it by putting it together a piece at a time over a long period of time, mind you.
Right.
20 years easily. But yeah, it's interesting to see if you look back at where I was and where I am personality-wise, it's you wouldn't think it was the same person.
Rob, you left HireLogic. You retired technically, right? But I think you remained on the board.
Yep.
As the chairman, and then they brought you back.
Yes.
So what's the story there? And what's it like to come back?
It's good, actually. Really, really good. So the reason I retired is when I started the company, it was me. And it grew by the time we took on investment money from our partners at JMI to 100 people. And then I did 4 acquisitions in that year. And we got up to 370 people. And then my job switched from building software and talking to clients, which I love, to managing people and finances and numbers and all that kind of stuff. And honestly, I just looked at it and said, this is not what I enjoy doing. And therefore, there's probably people better at it. And if I'm thinking of myself also as an investor in HireLogic, do I really want me doing this? Right. So I decided it was time to bring in somebody who would operationalize the company more, who liked dealing with those kinds of things. So we brought in this guy and I stayed for, the plan was a year, but then we had to part ways with our head of product at the time. And I'm a product guy, right? So I stayed an extra 6 months until we brought in a new head of product and got him oriented toward everything that needed to be done. And then I stepped out. And just coincidentally, it was literally planned for March 31st, 2020, which you probably know what happened then.
Yeah.
So it was good timing. And I was like, oh, I'm glad I don't have to lead this company through that. And the guy I brought in, Kevin, he did a great job. Like he operationalized, he got what would have been a 500 person company down to 300. And not by cutting services, but by getting the right people in the right places and putting processes and procedures in place and getting people to follow them, training and things like that. Like the stuff you need to do and stuff that I wouldn't have enjoyed and probably wouldn't have done well. He did a great job. He got us there. The thing is, though, knowing the industry, knowing associations, knowing community, there was no sort of vision left in the company. And so that was not awesome. And maybe more importantly, I just was very excited again. I was re-energized by the technology that was suddenly possible. It's like all the things I wanted to do, I couldn't do because of the complexity. Now suddenly it's not that complex.
Ah.
I'm not just talking about AI, but big data analytics. You know, I realized while I was sitting on the board, you know what? HireLogic has a ton of data. Turns out 1.5 billion interactions with members a month is a ton of data. And what can I do with that now with predictive analytics? There were things about AI. What can I automate that's tedious? Or more importantly, we focused on not necessarily taking away the jobs to be done that the association staff do, but doing the ones they're not doing. So like, if you think of our marketing platform, people tend to use it to market their event and membership, you know, the kind of identify 12 things that typical associations market. But we came up with a list of 200 things they could be doing. And it's like, well, they're not going to have time for these because they don't move the needle enough individually, but collectively, they're hugely important. Let's automate the campaigns for these. And that's something we couldn't have done before. I dreamed it up in 2017, I bought the two marketing companies.
I interviewed you.
And you
talked about the campaigns, and it was so exciting.
Back then, it was a great idea that was impossible to implement on the scale we needed to.
And like magic to think about.
Yeah. It almost would have taken magic, actually. I had this Mad Libs idea, right? Like, we're going to make campaigns and we're just going to fill in the blanks. Well, it turns out there's different voices, there's different audiences, there's different reading levels, there's different deliveries. It's all this stuff. And it was like, well, to do that for 2,000 associations would have been way more difficult. But then with AI, it's like, oh, well, it's actually not, because we can just
have
the AI write the message in whatever tone and whatever reading level. And we say, hey, you're an AI for, you know, the civil engineers. And it knows, okay, I'm talking to civil engineers. I'm going to talk in a tone that makes sense to civil engineers. And then we could say, using that exact same prompt, now you're talking to ski and snowboard instructors, and it's going to change the tone and reading level and all that sort of stuff when it talks to them, right? So what I couldn't do before, I could do. And that was my big one that I wanted to do. That's kind of what got me back into the mix. But since being back, discovered just a ton of things that we can do with these tools.
You're like George Lucas, right? He says there were things he couldn't do with the original movies.
Yes.
But when he could, he decided to make the next set of movies. It's like an Apple story and a George Lucas story.
You can compare me to those two guys anytime.
Well, let's go back to Higher Logic. So you're back. You bring in the vision. You brought back some people who had left. You've got these fantastic new products. You were out there talking about AI all the time. You're speaking at conferences. You just spoke to the ASCE fellows. Why is that important? Why are you personally putting yourself out there and saying, not necessarily selling your products, because I've heard some of these presentations, you're saying AI is important. Tell us why.
Well, the simple why is I don't want associations to miss the boat on this, because I think associations are super important to the world going forward. So it's a couple things. One, I want to put them on the right path to the extent that I can contribute to that, because I think they're important literally to the future of humanity. But also, I don't want them to miss a window that I'm afraid will close in the next 2 years, and then they're out of business.
Oh, you think it will literally close? Like if an association says, we're going to wait to experiment with AI to implement it, that doors are going to close?
Yeah, I think the doors will close. I think A, the ones who don't do that can take their business. And B, the people will just go away and just use ChatGPT and these guys to answer their questions. My big humanity thing is, like, right now, AI is creating, depending on what you read, 90% or more of the content on the internet. And unfortunately, the content on the internet is what trains the AI. So if you just do simple math there, it reaches a peak and can't go beyond it. There'll be some software engineering tweaks that make it better and better for a while. But if the content never evolves, that part of it is stuck.
Google has said this is a problem. They're saying if all the new content is essentially being written from the content and it's AIs being trained on AI-generated content, that this is a problem.
Yeah, it is. Totally. It's derivative without being additive, right?
And yes,
that's the problem. So when I think about this, I think there's kind of like two major contributors to new content. And one is research universities and colleges, but the other is associations. Associations exist in a lot of cases to create this content to raise the boats, right? So the reason you can get a 501c6 status is because you are contributing to the greater good.
Yeah.
And so publishing standards and specifications, doing research, having peer-reviewed journals, right? Even just newsletters and articles and opinions and blogs advances this thing, because associations are made up of the experts in these niche industries, right? So you take any given association, the more letters they have in their acronym, the more niche they are, and the fewer members, but the more expert those members are in that thing. And so I just love working with these people who know everything there is to know about whatever that industry is they represent. And so they contribute this new content, whether they give it to the AIs, the answer engines or not, certainly I think they should have their own if they don't do it to the big ones. That's a bright spot I see in the future for continuing to move humanity forward, right? Research and content creation that is thoughtful and moving things forward is a key. The second big thing I think is a huge advantage associations have is when I can't get an answer from an AI, and maybe I can't even get an answer from the content the association has already, guess what else they've done? They've gathered all of the world's experts in that area or state or county or whatever, you know, level of locality they have. They're all in one place and I can just ask them. And I don't mean I, because I don't, you know, I don't know what question I even ask of hand surgeons, but whoever needs to know that information, there's one gathering place, right? And it's online. And so, you know, getting back to higher logic for a second, we make online community. And I can claim to have been a genius 17 years ago and saw this coming. Totally not true. But we happen to be at a great place where we've spent the last 17 years helping associations bring their thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of experts online in one place and gathered all that content. And that's the place to go when the ChatGPTs of the world can't answer the question.
Wow. So I'm hearing lots of really interesting and provocative things here. You're saying associations really get on that AI journey fast so that you can be more efficient, so that you can have good data that you are actually querying and can make good decisions about. But you're also saying double down on community, because the more people in your profession or industry that you can get into the community, they will be creating the content of the future that will continue to feed the AIs so that now we do have new, fresh, innovative, and creative content.
Yep. I think the best thing the AIs do is it's a better search. It's Google on steroids on steroids. So I can ask a question of Google in the Google search sense, and it will give me a jillion answers, right? Of which I look at the first three, maybe. What AI will do is look at way more than the first three, will synthesize an answer and give me options that I wasn't thinking of.
Right, right.
It opens my eyes to things other than what I was actually asking. And this is why I talk to ChatGPT all day long. Like, I have an idea, I ask it a question. But then when it says, "Does that help?" I will answer it back, even though who cares? But it'll say, "Well, next thing you might want to think about is this." And it always does that.
Right.
And I'm like, "That's actually a really good idea. Tell me more about that." And we'll have a conversation for sometimes an hour. And at the end of that, I got way more than I initially went to find. And that's super useful. And I think that associations can do the same thing. So first of all, my advice would be, you brought up efficiencies. So I sort of divide it into two different sides. Side one is inside the organization, you need to become more efficient, right? You need to use AI. The staff needs to use AI to do their jobs better. I really believe pretty much any knowledge worker job can be twice as efficient with AI or more. And it, not overnight, but like as you get into this thing. But the other side of it is, what is your product? In our case, it's software, but in association's case, it's the member benefits, right? And what are the benefits? Well, engagement is a big one, right? You mentioned earlier, they want to talk to each other more than they want to read the content. That's engagement. It's being part of the community that the association represents, right? And so what I think is important is to like become the second answer engine, right? So if ChatGPT is my primary, I need a second one. In my case, it's Cursor or it's Claude or something technical where I'm talking about programming. But if I'm, you know, an association member, I want to talk to something that's an expert in my association stuff. And to the extent that associations kind of block their content to members only, that means the answer engines don't have it. If they don't have it, they can't answer questions on it, right? So they are at a very basic level answering questions with old information. So the association can take two paths. They can free up that information and support their mission by making it so that all of these answer engines can answer anyone's questions about the stuff they're trying to make better. But the downside, of course, is then how do you make money if you're just giving everything away? Or they can say, well, we have a private one that is better. And when that one, ChatGPT or whatever, fails you, you come to ours. And like, I wouldn't go to the hand surgeon's chat thing because, you know, ChatGPT, tell me anything I want to know. Right.
But you might go to an IEEE chatbot or an ACM chatbot.
Exactly.
But, you know, Rob, it's interesting that you say this. This is a conversation that I've been having with my team, and this is keeping us up at night. This is existential.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're seeing associations actually on their websites say, hey, AIs, don't come here. And then they're blocking the AI engines through the robots.txt, for example. And we're saying, wow, how do you balance member value? And how do you manage protecting content, but also making sure that there's good information out there? I'm not sure there are good answers, but I think this is something that associations need to be discussing now.
Yes, yes, yes. Now, because the window will close.
Yeah.
My view on it is make the second one. Make it so that whoever your members are, they use ChatGPT for normal stuff and they use you for expert stuff.
Yes, but you have to have enough information so that the ChatGPTs of the world will even reference you.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you are not even in the any of the answers or any of the references. Because, I mean, the stat that we read was by the end of 2024, Rob, 60% of Google searches were not resulting in a click.
Yes.
In other words, people got the answer and they went their merry way. So if you rely on clicks from Google for purchases in your store or people learning about your conference or learning about, you know, whatever it is that you do, you got to still be enough in the answer engines so that people even know you exist.
Yeah.
That's the existential thing that is kind of keeping us up at night.
Yeah. I mean, the way I say that is Google traffic will go to zero sometime in 2026. To your point, it was down 60% by the end of 2024. It's continuing to go down. It'll be even Google saying it. It's going to go to nothing.
Yeah, well, Tori Miller Lu said it's going to be dead in 28. And I said, oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
I think you and I think it's going to happen in 2026.
Yes, for sure. What I used to say is the minute my mom uses ChatGPT instead of Google, it's dead.
Yeah, yeah.
I was with her a few weeks ago and I told her this to be funny. And she's like, what are you talking about? I haven't used Google in a year.
Wow. Because she's using ChatGPT?
She is, yeah. She's been using it for longer than I gave her credit. And I should remember, she is a little more technical than most moms her age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Way to go, mom, though.
Yeah, no, for sure.
You know, since you're thinking hard about these things and the future and what associations should be doing, I had a conversation with a nephew, and he just finished college, and he's thinking about his next. And he's a math guy, and he said, I'm thinking of doing engineering or medicine. I know two completely different things, but he's that bright. And he said, but I'm kind of worried about my job prospects because of AI. What would you say to someone like him?
It's a good question. And in fact, I would say it's true of pretty much any knowledge worker industry at the moment. You have to think about what's going to happen. And actually, for that matter, even the physical labor type ones will be replaced by robots eventually. And eventually, only because manufacturing isn't as fast as bits, right? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, engineering, the way we think of engineering is we're using tools like Cursor that significantly speed up what we can do, or maybe even a better example would be we can do things we never could have done before. I'll give you an example. I've always wanted to make our product work in French because we have a lot of Canadian clients. And every time we start that project, we realize how big a project it is. We have 10 million lines of code easily and thousands and thousands and thousands of references where we say something in English. And it could be like a prompt on a page, relatively easy to find, but an error message deep in the code or a calculated message that has numbers in it. And so we've literally started that project three times and abandoned it. We saved what we did, but realized we're never going to get there. But then one day I was like, you know what? I can just have Cursor go through and have a prompt, like look for any English words or phrases that would be shown to the end user, and it can find that.
Right, right, right.
And it did, and I automated it, and it took what would have probably been, if we dedicated the time, it would have been 2 years with four people, I estimate. And I did it myself in probably 80 hours, and I didn't get all the way there. I've turned it over to the development team, and they've taken it over, and it's probably taken another couple hundred hours to get this first phase done. But like, we were able to do it.
It's now in the realm of possible.
Exactly, exactly. And so you really got to think outside the box on what you can accomplish with these things. I don't think this answered your question at all. In fact, I know it didn't because you were talking about medicine versus engineering. But my point is where that probably replaced 2 years four people, so 8-person years of engineering time. I wouldn't have done those 8-person years of engineering.
Right.
And so I don't think it's going to eliminate the computer science related jobs anytime soon. There will be eliminations, meaning people who we kept around just because they knew something that we might need one day. We don't do that anymore because we can just interrogate the code.
Or we need 2 developers instead of 4.
Yes, exactly. But my view currently is I want 4 because I want to do twice as much. I want to do it twice as fast. There's so many things I can do now that I couldn't have done before. Another example, like we never had any accounting features in our product. We never needed it. But like, I was always like, I don't think about accounting. Accounting is hard. And now I'm like, well, first of all, I have an amazing COO and knows all the stuff. But more importantly, I can get most of the way there by asking ChatGPT these questions and building those kind of features in. I'm not going to do accounting because it's not applicable to a community. But my point is things that I was like, that's too hard is no longer too hard, which lets me do things that I couldn't have done, right? And so again, point being, do you use half as many people or do you get twice as much done? That's going to be the first question. Eventually, it may be that, okay, now we can all float on our lawn chairs like in Wally and drink milkshakes.
Right, right.
And that might be a thing if we get that much more efficient such that things don't cost as much, right?
Or we generate so much wealth from the machines.
Exactly, exactly. And we can all have universal basic income and just kick back.
Well, what I'm hearing from this is, and I certainly believe this, and this is the advice I gave him, is think hard about how you're going to partner with AI.
Yes.
And think about how the profession is going to change. The profession will probably still be needed, but you better supercharge your career with a very, very deep knowledge of AI tools.
Yes. We talk about it as a companion. AI is a companion that sits next to you and knows everything you would ever need to know. It can't do anything. I mean, it can. The agents can do things, but it's not going to come up with the ideas. You need to do it.
Right. And I bet doctors don't go into the profession thinking, I'm going to be working with a machine. So they're going to have to think outside the box the way you did with your, I want to develop my product in French so that they can become better, faster, dare I say it, more empathetic doctors.
Yeah.
Through the use of AI.
And does anyone have enough time to do everything they want to do?
Right.
No one does.
Yeah.
If you can offload half the work, then you have that much more time to do what you can do, should be doing, and are paying attention to, et cetera.
Rob, I could talk to you all day. I'm going to have you back because every time I have a conversation with you, I feel like the wheels start turning and then I can't wait to tell my team about this conversation. If people want to learn more about your products, we'll put a link in the show notes, not just to your main website, but to the products, because you've got a whole slew of them. You've got your Thrive, you've got, you know, all kinds of tools.
Yep.
If they want to connect with you, what's the best way to do it? LinkedIn?
LinkedIn's easy. It's just Rob Wanger, rob@higherlogic.com, if you want to email me. I love talking to clients, prospects, people in general. I always say every conversation I go into, I come out smarter. So if anyone wants to reach out, I'm here.
I'm going to have you back.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.